It is April 19th, 2022. It is 10:03. There is a quorum present. We're going to go ahead and call this meeting to order. If you can all join me in the pledge.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Just a reminder, if you can silence your cell phones. All right, moving right along to item number three, this discussion for possible action, consideration and possible approval of the agenda for April 19th, 2022. Is there any public comment regarding today's agenda?
Hey, boy, Mr. Chairman.
Go for it.
All right, just want to make a change recommendation. Now we move item number 31 to after number 10. It's a simple presentation. We were unable to get it in the earlier in the agenda draft. And then we also do not anticipate having closed session today. That's all. Thank you.
All right. And you said that was going to be after number 10?
That would be number 31 to after number 10. That is the dispatch presentation.
Okay. Sounds good. Commissioner Yellman, do you have any questions about the agenda?
I do not. Thank you.
Vice Chairman?
No, thanks.
Do you entertain a motion then, please?
Yeah, I move to approve today's agenda with the noted changes.
Second that motion.
There's a motion and a second. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Motion passes unanimously. Moving right along to item number four of today's consent agenda. Is there any public comment regarding today's consent agenda? Not seeing any public comment. Commissioner Gilman, do you have any questions or comments about the consent agenda?
No, thank you.
Thanks, Chairman.
Good to go.
All right, would you entertain a motion, please?
Yeah, I move to approve today's consent agenda as presented.
Second.
There's a motion and a second. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Motion passes unanimously. On to item number five, this discussion only. No action, no public comment will be taken. These are committee and staff reports. I'm going to start off with the Sheriff's Office.
Good morning, Commissioners. Just a few things. Regret to inform you, a longtime Lockwood resident passed yesterday, Elsie Hook. She's been suffering for some while, so our condolences go out to her family. Second, some of you may have heard or received a letter regarding purchase of alcohol if you have a liquor license. We had an issue recently where there were some questions came up about it. So working with the Department of Taxation and the District Attorney's Office, we got to the bottom of the requirements, and rather than trying to do some big sweep, we took it as an educational opportunity and sent out a letter to all license holders as to how they need to interact with their liquor license and purchase of alcohol going forward. So there was that. And then lastly, just a little bit of fun information. Myself and Chairman Carmona will be jumping into Lake Tahoe this weekend in support of Special Olympics. So invite you all up to watch us freeze. And if you don't want to go, you can always go online, make a donation to Special Olympics, and we would greatly appreciate it. So, any questions?
Commissioner Gilman, do you have any questions for the
Sheriff? No questions. Good luck there in Lake Tahoe. It's
cold. Vice Chairman?
I was going to ask where the fun is in that, but then I realized it's in watching you do it. So, thank you.
Well, yeah, and the fun for us is dragging you in with us.
Oh, yeah.
Or dragging me out. Either one. All right. Thanks again. Moving right along to the Fire Department, Chief Longcar.
I know what it is.
Okay. Public Works, Jason Wersbicki.
Morning, Chairman, Commissioners. Jason Wersbicki for the record. Just to give you guys a heads up, we will be closing 6 Mile on Monday, May 2nd from approximately 10 a.m. to 3:30 p.m. for road striping. And Loudstown will be that same day as well. And then just on another note, last commission meeting, you guys had approved us for the striping project at $22,500, and it'll be an additional $2,400 to make it a double yellow on Lousetown, so we're moving on forward with that one. So, any questions?
Commissioner Gilman, anything?
Double yellow, moving on up.
Sure.
All right.
Thank you.
Jason, one sec. So you said you'd be doing both those the same day. Are they going to be running at the same time?
No, they'll be consecutive. They'll hit Lousetown after 6 Mile.
Gotcha.
We have to leave 6 Mile closed for several hours for cure time.
Gotcha.
Since the shady corners and everything.
Okay, so six mile will be open after 3:30?
Correct.
All right, same with Lousetown?
Yes.
All right, sounds good. Thank you.
Okay.
Next on the list, project coordinator, Mike Northan. In person.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Commissioners. Mike Northan, Operations Projects Coordinator. Number one, the V&T Freight Depot. We've had a lot of junk got moved out of there in the last 2 weeks from both the property and the building. Most of which was deteriorated lumber, some old theater seating, broken pianos, a pool table, some scrap metal, and a variety of other things. Electrical panels have been cleared up and cleaned up. All the old cords, frayed wiring have all been removed and or de-energized, and additional interior lighting has been installed. Upcoming work includes removal of the old overhead wire that runs to the pole across the street there at Sutton, and the relocation of the exit signs inside. You're going to see construction of temporary guardrails, exit stairs, wheelchair ramps. These are temporary and are approved by the Comstock Historic District until such time as we have an approved plan for more permanent alterations to the building. We're currently getting quotes for specialty cleaning for the Freight Master's office and also in the main area with an eye toward preserving the graffiti that's in there and protecting that. That graffiti runs from about 1880 through about 1940, so we want to preserve as much of that as we can. And we're currently on track to have the work done and the fence removed, site cleared of all vegetation by about early June. Item two, Lockwood Tower Road. All the assets are currently in place. Contractor is mobilized. We do have an agenda item coming up today which will finalize all the contracts, and work can begin as early as this week. The project seems to be very popular in Lockwood, so we look forward to getting after it and getting this completed by June 30. Courthouse Pavers Project. Work is proceeding. We have 100% block removal. We're now working with the contractor on the sub-base materials and layer thickness that will provide the best finished product in terms of block stability and resistance to differential settling. And we're also working closely with SHPO on the allowable surface treatment for the blocks to plane those down, get them into a flat walking surface again. Public Works did take advantage of the work here to install a new two new water and one new sewer lines from B Street into the interior of the building. They had replaced the lines under the building and out in the street, but had not had the opportunity to access those lines under the sidewalk until now, so we had nice new lines from the street on in. Last item, number four, Virginia City Highlands Fire Station. Plans and specifications and the invitation to bid for the new apparatus building have been published. We are actively seeking bids for the project and notifying contractors. Hopefully we can generate some interest in this project. The bid pack is available by registering with the project coordinator. Anyone interested can contact me and receive a bid pack, and that also goes for the public as well if anyone is interested in having a look at those plans. And I do have two agenda items coming up later. With that, I'll take any questions, sir.
Thank you, Mike. Commissioner Gilman, do you have any questions?
No questions. Thanks, Mike.
Sure.
Thank you.
No need to. Thanks again, Mike. How about communications, Becky Parsons?
Good morning, Becky Parsons, for the record. I just have the text 2911 to update everybody on. It is up and running. If you'd like more information, you can get it online at the FCC, text to 911. There's a lot of stuff that goes on with the text to 911, so I would suggest reading it. It is preferred that you call 911 because it's definitely we can get more information. However, we are up and available for the text. And that's all I have, and I'll talk to you guys later on an agenda.
Thank you. Commissioner Gilman, do you have any questions?
No questions, thank you.
No, sure. Thank you. Right. Thanks again for the
thank
update.
You. Thank you.
Emergency Management, Laura Mather.
Good morning, Laura Mather, for the record. I am very happy to report that for the reporting period of March 27th through April 3rd, Story County had no reported COVID-19 cases. So, not to put a damper on it, that just means that there were no formal reports of the COVID-19 virus within the county. As we know, people have access to home tests. Those that are vaccinated typically have much less severe symptoms, so often they don't go to the doctor or test for it. But it's good news. We're moving down and we're staying down as far as the numbers, so good news. And I do want to remind everybody that any questions, comments, concerns, information needed, gethealthycarsoncity.org. That website is still very active when it comes to the COVID-19 virus, still has all of that information, where to get tested, vaccinations, any questions like that. End of report.
Thank you, Laura. Commissioner Gilman, anything for Laura?
All good news. Thanks, Laura.
Vice Chairman?
Thank you. No.
All right, thanks again for that update. Moving on to Community Relations, Honey Tapley.
Good morning, Honey Tapley for the record. This is just a reminder that Story County is partnered with other Northern Nevada governments to promote the Nevada Speed Test. The Nevada Speed Test is an element of the Western Nevada Broadband Initiative, and that is a coalition of local governments that are all members of the Western Nevada Development District. And this project is to bring reliable broadband service to the most unserved and underserved homes and businesses in the region. So if you go to www.nevadaspeedtest.org, that is a mapping tool that will, you'll just type in your address. It takes less than a minute, and you can do it with your cell phone, a laptop, your computer, and you can do it many different times just to see. They're trying to get a good gauge of how the internet reliability and connectivity is in the region. But also, the link is on our website, so if you kind of scroll down to the middle of the page on storycounty.org, there's a nice square little button you can push, and it literally took me 30 seconds this morning when I tried it out. But WNDD is encouraging people to just continually test the system so that they can get a good, reliable database for the broadband services that are going to be coming out. And that is the end of my report.
Honey. Commissioner Gilman, do you have anything for Honey?
Thank you.
Honey, just to confirm, the test is anonymized, right? There's no personal information attached to that.
Just
test.
Your address.
Perfect.
Yes.
Thank
so
you.
That's the only thing is you enter the exact location where you're sitting. Like, so this morning I didn't enter my home address. I entered my work address. But if I were to sit in a restaurant downtown, like, you would just enter the address location. So, yeah, nobody's names or anything is attached to that.
Perfect. I know that's a concern for some
yes.
people.
Yes. Oh, so absolutely.
I'd mention it. Thank you.
Yep. You're welcome.
Thank you. Appreciate the report. Moving on to the VCTC, Linda Ritter.
Good morning, for the record, Linda Ritter, VCTC. I brought Leah to talk about some of the events that are coming up, give you an update of some things that have recently happened. But just want to share with you, I gave the Tourism Commission last week a report on what's happening in occupancy rates and transient lodging taxes in Virginia City, just looking at Virginia City. And it's been very positive. If you look at February between 2019 and this year, it's gone up 180% as far as the tax coming in, and that's just in Virginia City again, taking out everything else. The occupancy rates have increased by 80%, so it's a real steep climb that we're seeing, and we anticipate the rest of the year continuing as well. I'm going to turn it over to Leah Cruz to talk about some of the events we've had and some things that are going to happen in the near future. Go ahead, Leah.
Good morning. Leah Cruz for the record. In events past, I just wanted to let everybody know that the Father-Daughter Days and Dances, Day and Dance is continuing to grow and gain popularity. We had 405 tickets sold this year. Last year, we did sell 460. However, last year was the first big event of this type post-pandemic. Pre-pandemic, we had only sold 339 tickets, so we're well on our way to continuing and growing that. The next event that we have coming up is the Virginia City Grand Prix. That is April 30th through May 1st. That's a Saturday and Sunday, and the C Street will be closed between Sutton and Taylor from 8 a.m. to 11 a.m. each day. We have already received our proper NDOT permit, and everything's ready to go. VC Grand Prix officials will be monitoring and controlling all the crossings during the event, so we have everything all set up for that. And then after that, another big event we have coming is the Chili on the Comstock. It's the 39th annual. That will be May 21st and 22nd. So far, we have 20 cooks signed up, which is amazing. We usually don't get that kind of excitement for it, so we're really excited about that. If you want to join the fun, if you want to just sample chili, it's 10 samples for $30. If you want to sample both beer and chili, it's 12 samples of combined. That'll be $35. And if you want to go all in, then it's $50 for everything. And then the only other small update I have for Pipers is our spring play is coming April 6th through the 8th and April 13th through the 15th. Tickets are on sale online, so please be sure to check those out. They're very reasonable, super affordable. Come support our Pipers players. And we are in the process of renting out all of our facilities, so please keep us in mind for any events you have in the future. We're renting out Pipers Opera House, Gold Hill Depot, hopefully the Freight Depot soon, and the Fairgrounds. That's it.
Thank you, Leah. Commissioner Gilman, do you have anything for Leah?
I'm just proud of VCTC and how you're growing. There's so much good news coming.
Thank you.
Thank you for all the efforts going on. Wonderful.
Agreed. Vice Chairman?
Yeah, thank you. Just clarification on the dates on the Pipers spring. I believe you said April. Did you mean May?
Oh, sorry, May. Yeah.
No problem. First two weekends in May.
Yeah, they have not already passed. We are still having them in May.
Okay,
yes.
All right. Thank you very much for
thank
the updates.
You.
Moving right along to the Comptroller's Office. Jennifer McCain.
Nothing at this time. Thank you.
All right. The Assessor's Office. Do you see Jana on there? Planning Department, Kathy Canfield.
Nothing today, thank you.
All right, thanks, Kathy. Recorder's Office, Marnie Hanson-Martinez.
Good morning, nothing to report today.
Thanks, Marnie.
Thank you.
IT Department, James Dean. Yeah. All right. Human Resources, Jeannie, I see her back there. Yeah.
Jeannie Green, nothing new to report. Thanks.
Thanks, Jeannie. Community Development, Pete Renault. Okay. Eric Sean on there?
Yep.
All right. So Community Chest, Eric Sean.
Yeah, hey, good morning, commissioners. I just have one update. It's really not an update. It's sincere appreciations to James Dean, Tim Shropshire, and the rest of the Story County IT team. You all know what an all-star cast you have in terms of their abilities and their talents, but they, one of the most professional crews I've ever had to work with, had the pleasure of working with, they helped to run the microwave high-speed internet, Story County internet over to our building and get it up and running. And we have faster service than we've ever had before. And I know the plans are then to bounce off of our building and use that to give the Story County Senior Center and the swimming pool the same kind of access. But I just wanted to publicly acknowledge the Story County IT team. Couldn't have asked for a better, more professional crew. So that's all I have to report.
Thank you, Eric.
Yeah.
We'll definitely pass that along. Commissioner Gilman, do you have any questions for Eric?
No, thank you, Eric.
Thanks, Chairman.
Thanks, Eric.
All right, thanks again for that report, Eric. Moving along to the Senior Center, Stacey York.
Good morning, Stacey York for the record. Just a couple dates to throw out there. Tomorrow, 1 to 3 at the Virginia City Center, We will have a dog nail trimming clinic. We partnered with Boxers and Buddies to do cheap nail clippings for some dogs. So if you want to make an appointment, call the senior center. And our next COVID vaccine clinic that will include booster shots will be Tuesday, April 26th from 3 to 4. And that is it today.
Thanks, Stacy. Commissioner Gilman, do you have anything for Stacy?
Nothing today, thank you.
All right, Vice Chair?
No, thank you.
All right, thanks again for that report. About the Justice Court, do we have Judge Harrington on today? No. All right. How about the DA's office?
Nothing to report today, Mr. Chairman, thank you.
All right. County Manager, Austin Osborne.
Nothing to report today, thank you, Mr. Chairman.
All right. Last but not least, the clerk. Dory, do you have anything?
Dory Nevin, Story County Clerk Treasurer. We'd like to remind Story County voters and residents that the 2022 election season is upon us, and now is the time to make sure your voter information is correct and up to date in the Nevada's voting system. Residents are encouraged to double-check their mailing address and party affiliation on file with the state, since primary election sample ballots and election ballots will be start being mailed out in May, unless a voter has specifically specified differently. Voters can access their voter registration information and make any needed changes via the state's website at registertovote.nb.gov. Or by visiting the Story County Clerk Treasurer's Office. And that's all I have to report.
Thank you, Dory. Commissioner Gilman, do you have any questions for Dory?
No, sir, thank you.
Vice Chairman?
No, thank you.
All right. Dory, when do the ballots actually get mailed out in May?
They should be mailed out. Out of state will be mailed out by the committee.
Okay.
And the in-state? I'm sorry, by the end of May.
Okay. End of May. And the in-state ones, same? Okay. All right. Getting back to the regular agenda. We're at item number 6, which is board comment. I'm going to start off to my left. Commissioner Gilman, do you have anything to
add? I have nothing to report today, thank you.
Mr. Chairman?
No, I don't have anything specific. Thank you.
All right. The only thing I want to mention is that the fire department put on a meeting out in the Highlands this weekend. Had about 20-plus folks there. We'd like to see a little better attendance, but they covered defensible space, insurance for the home. It was a good meeting. Lasted about an hour, 40 minutes or so, but thanks to the fire chief and his crew for getting out there and updating the residents in that area. So now we move on to item number 7, which is public comment. Public comment will be allowed at the beginning and end of each meeting. This comment should be limited to matters not on today's calendar agenda. Public comment will be allowed after each item on the agenda. This comment should be limited to the agendized topic. With that said, is there any public comment today? Any comment on the chat?
It was muted earlier. That's what most of the comments are.
Okay. All right. As a reminder for the folks on Zoom, you can raise your use the raise your hand feature, or for the calling in, you can use star 6 to unmute yourself. Not seeing any public comment, we're going to move on to item number 8, which is discussion for possible action. Consideration of possible approval of the interstate interlocal contract beginning fiscal year 2023 to fiscal year 2026 between the state of Nevada, acting by and through its Department of Health and Human Services, Division of Welfare and Supportive Services, the First Judicial District Court, Story County and Carson City, and the proposed budgets for reimbursement from the State Child Support Enforcement Program in the amount of $34,782 for fiscal year 2023 and $35,181 for fiscal year 2024.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Max Cortez, Court Administrator for the First Judicial District Court. The intrastate interlocal contract before you was actually created back in 2007. Story County has been a party to the contract since then. A little history of the contract and how we got here. In 2006, Story County, Carson City, and a few other counties had a contract that paid for a hearing officer to travel to each of the counties to perform court child support hearings. And so those residents living in those counties would go to the hearings, and each county paid for that hearing officer. When Judge Russell was elected, him and I met with the state and said, you know, how can we do things better? Because we were receiving complaints that people were not having their child support hearings fast enough. They were only doing them like once a month at that time. So they said, well, if you want to provide the hearing officer and the staff, we can go ahead and have reimbursement from the state to your county. So instead of Story County paying, Carson City paying for a hearing officer, Carson City provides the employees, they provide the hearing officer. We have cases heard one time per week, and residents from Story County, residents from Carson City, will not need to travel to Reno unless they want to, and they can have their cases heard timely. And there's no cost to Story County. There's no cost to Carson City. The two budgets that are before you, we have to provide that to the state every 2 years to let them know how much it's going to cost the staff's time, and to in order to get reimbursed for those for that time, and for the hearing officer's time. So there's no cost to Story County or the city. So it's a different way of how we used to do it. But we are required every 4 years to do the interstate interlocal contract, and we are required every 2 years to provide the state with an estimate of how much time it's going to cost the employees and the hearing officer to spend on those cases.
All right. Thank you. Is there any public comment regarding this item? For Max? I don't see any public comment. Commissioner Gilman, do you have any questions or comments for Max?
I don't have any questions. I think it's a reasonable program.
Vice Chairman?
Yeah. No, thank you, Ms. Cortez, for making the trip up and explaining it so succinctly.
Agreed. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right. Seeing as no questions, Vice Chairman, would you entertain a motion then?
Yeah, I'd be happy to. I move to approve the intrastate interlocal contract beginning fiscal year 2023 to fiscal year 2026 between the State of Nevada, acting by and through its Department of Health and Human Services, Division of Welfare and Supportive Services, the First Judicial District Court, Story County, and Carson City, and the proposed budgets for reimbursement from the State Child Support Enforcement Program in the amount of $34,782 for fiscal year 2023 and $35,181 for fiscal year 2024.
I'll second.
There's a motion and a second. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Motion passes unanimously. Thank you again, Max. Appreciate you coming up. All right. Moving on to item number 9, this is discussion for possible action. Discussion and possible approval to determination that costs of collecting water basin fees by imposing an assessment on all properties within the water basin is more than revenue expected to be obtained, and therefore that the water basin assessments in the amount of $14,400 may be appropriated from the general fund. Keith.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Keith Loomis, District Attorney's Office. This is a matter that was continued from the last meeting as a question had come up as to what was the county getting for the $14,400 in assessments. And with us is Mr. Dan Randles from the Water Resources to explain that and answer that question. Mr. Randles.
Good morning, Commissioners. Dan Randles from Division of Water Resources, State Engineer's Office. So there's two basins that we're talking about today, Dayton Valley and Tracy Segment. Both of those basins are shared with other counties, but I'm sure as you've talked about many times in here, we've seen quite a bit of growth over the years and quite a bit of increase in water use and everything. My office is in charge of managing those water rights, and following up on water use and availability, meaning people's availability to change those water rights into other uses. Sometimes this often is us coordinating with the county or cities, stuff of that nature. I sent a letter to Keith Loomis here that kind of spelled out what we're actually doing with that $14,000. This collection is from the basins directly, and the people that live in those areas is the intent. By direction of the state of Nevada Department of Taxation, it is recommended that that be done at a flat rate. But the NRS, a couple of years ago, made available that you do have the ability to do that out of a general fund if it makes more sense to pay it out of that general fund. That is under NRS 534-040, Section 2, and that is available to you. The one assessment of $2,400 to Story County for Dayton Valley, that is only a portion. The majority of that basin collection is actually to Lyon County, but as there are water rights that fall into Story County, Story County gets assessed, Lyon County gets assessed a lot more, and then Carson City gets assessed the same that Story County does. And that's just based on a little bit of water rights dispersion as we've calculated. One of the things I'd like to mention is that any of the money that's collected in these basins, this isn't something where we take it and we just put it into a large pot and we spend all over the place. This is actually money that we try to manage and put directly for work related to those basins. So this isn't, you know, paying for us to operate in Vegas. This isn't paying for us to operate in Elko or Ely. This is directly related to your county and these basins. I really like to stress that because money is staying here to help protect your resources that you guys are dealing with. Tracy segment, it's a little bit different in that Story County assessment for $12,000 is about double what it is in Washoe County. The majority of the rights, though, as you can imagine, that this has come on due to, I think it's Trick, so the out there, and we're managing a lot of water rights or wells in that area, but we're also looking at what the connectivity is between them and, you know, are they having any impacts to the Truckee River, or are they having any impacts to other people's wells that are in place. I could honestly go on about all of this for hours if you wanted me to, but that's kind of the short answer. But I've worked for water resources for 14 years, so definitely in the trenches for a lot of this, and our staff does get paid out of these funds. That's the majority of where this money is going. That is the majority of what we're doing, operating costs. As in the letter that was addressed to the commissioners here, we mentioned that we're doing monitoring inventories. An inventory for us means that we're going out and we're actually checking all the wells that have permits with my office and seeing how much they are pumping on a year-to-year basis. If we're not checking them ourselves, we're actually having, you know, sometimes it would be Story County is reporting to us directly. We're more than happy to get that information, but we still have to review it. We still have to compile it together and review that information as a whole, as it affects the basin, as it affects the health of the basin and everybody's existing rights. So if you have any questions, I'm more than happy to answer those now.
All right, thank you. Mr. Gilman, do you have any questions?
No, I have no questions. I believe this action is in the best interest of our county. So my comment.
Okay. Thanks, Chairman.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Reynolds. I'm the troublemaker who didn't just approve it last time, and I apologize for that. But I really appreciate the letter. It helped me understand quite a bit. I had just a couple of quick questions, and forgive my ignorance. First one is, I'm just curious how many basins in total cover in whole or in part Story County. And if you don't have that right off the top of your head, that's perfectly fine. But
I don't have it right off the top. Story County is one of the smaller areas. You do have a couple of basins that, you know, just barely touch into. You know, this would be, you know, like Churchill Valley or Churchill Hydrographic Basin, some stuff like that. If we didn't find any water rights that actually cross over into the county, we're not sending you an assessment. There's nothing that we're actually doing work in Story County to check on those, so it doesn't make any sense for us. So we're truly trying to only assess you based upon work that we're doing here. And the two basins that are predominantly that make up the county are Dayton Valley and Tracy Segment. Any of the other basins, they merely touch, like I said, very small portions.
Great. Thank you. Are all basins in Nevada supervised, and what is it that triggers your office supervising a basin?
So in Nevada, we have 256 basins and sub-basins, and out of those, I would say that they are all managed. So we have specialists such as myself or Krista that is joining me today, manages basins. Not all of them are designated. A basin must be designated by the state engineer's office before we can conduct an assessment. A lot of people, though, think that a designated basin automatically means that we're going to be coming and doing an assessment like this, and that's not true. We do collect an assessment in about 100 basins currently. There's about 140 designated basins, but a lot of those you'll find are very populated areas. So obviously the Truckee Meadows, all those basins, Story County here, Dayton Valley, like I said, blowing up and stuff like that. Obviously everything down in the Las Vegas area, Pahrump area, I'm sure you've seen stuff in the news and everything like that. Those are places that we manage quite a bit, and you know, similar, their assessments are significantly higher based on that we're having to spend a significant amount of time and a significant amount of staff to manage those areas. Again, as I've mentioned, the money that gets collected there stays there. Money that gets collected here stays here. With that said, it does have to be designated. In this particular case, under the NRS, this particular area, both of these basins are considered predominantly non-agriculture, meaning that the area is typically like a municipal use or construction or other industrial uses. It's not agricultural uses. So per the NRS, we have to ask that this be collected as a flat rate. And that's something that we've coordinated and worked with Department of Taxation to say it makes more sense just to do that flat rate. Like, you don't have to adjust it, hopefully making that a little bit easier on the treasurer so that you don't have to figure out calculated rates. But the recent change to NRS does make it available, like you mentioned, of paying that out of a general fund and, you know, to support the county.
Great, thank you. Well, and I certainly appreciate you pointing out that the money stays here, because just from a good governance perspective, it helps us to be able to justify, you know, when we're not directly connected to the service being provided, but we're part of the revenue source. My last question is simply if there's any way to know, or if we should expect significant additional management needs in the future beyond your normal increases in costs and those kind of things.
These basins have seen a significant increase within the last couple of years. And when I say significant, Dayton Valley, you know, back in the 90s, went from essentially like a $1,000 or $1,400 request from us to now it's a $2,400 request from us. I know that can be a significant cost increase, but, you know, as the cost of living and stuff has gone up, we really try to manage and make smart decisions with these funds, and we're really trying to make sure that when we're doing this work that, you know, we're not wasting our time out there and stuff like that. But this does provide funding for about, you know, all the basin assessments combined provide funding for about a quarter of our office, either partially or fully. And I would say that, you know, just the cost of hiring right now, the cost, you know, the stuff that we're starting to see, this is, each of these is about 2 years out, and, you know, knowing that things are coming in legislature, such as the minimum wage, possible increase and stuff like that, it's like we have to make sure that we account for that in these assessments. I don't think that we'll see, I mean, it's relative what you consider significant. I don't think that we'll see these double, you know, too soon, but I wouldn't say it's out of the question, but I think that'll be over the next 5 to 10 years, honestly. And, you know, in doing that, in doing our review, we took a look at how much, you know, this breakdown would be and how much it would cost per parcel. And my estimates have been that it's roughly $2 per parcel of the taxable parcels that can receive this. So if it was to go to $4, you know, we're really trying to take that into account and really trying to make sure that we're not, you know, hitting people too badly. It's going to come on their tax bill. It's not a tax. It's a special assessment. But we're definitely taking all that into account when we review each of these basins.
Very good. Thank you very much. I'm supportive of paying this from the general fund, as staff has said that it's probably more work to put it on as a special assessment. So I appreciate the indulgence of my fellow commissioners for asking those questions. Thank you, Mr. Adams.
You're welcome.
And the question I have for you, you mentioned monitoring wells. Do you guys work in hand with the USGS?
Yes, we actually work hand in hand with USGS and other, like I said, state and public entities for that collection of that data. A lot of that information is available on our website. In doing so, we still take their information and their data and add that to our reports and review it and see if it makes sense with either data that we've collected or data that's been provided from other entities.
Gotcha.
So that information from USGS, we still work very closely with them, but it is still information that, you know, we may not be the boots on the ground, but we still are looking at that data to see if it makes sense to us.
Thank you. Is there any public comment regarding this item? If I can ask you to come up and speak at the podium, please state your name for the record.
Tom Zachary. I was wondering if, I don't know if this is exactly the appropriate time, but the ratio between water rights and actual water. I know a lot of different basins in Nevada are way over allocated. Are any of our basins in that thing, especially the Dayton Valley side?
Okay. In answer to the question, in both cases, both basins are considered what we call over-appropriated, meaning that the estimated amount of perennial yield, so this is the amount that would come from rainfall, snowfall, that recharges the aquifer, that amount that's been estimated by USGS and my office. A lot of these come from reports. They're a little bit old now, 60s, 70s, or 80s. They established a number as far as accounting of water, and that number in both of these basins has been allocated fully, but one of the things that's helping us is that not everybody is fully pumping their allocated amounts. They're not fully utilizing their allocated amounts. So that actually is helping our office. In some cases, some people are fully using their amounts, and if they overpump, we're trying to stay on top of that. And that a lot of that is coming through those inventory reports, like I mentioned. And that's partly to manage the basin and partly to protect other water right users or anybody else with a well in the area. So hopefully that answers your question.
Perfect.
which part did I miss?
I sat in this room when the Highlands were approved. And one of my questions then.
Tom, could you come up to the podium so we can get on the record?
Yeah, it's Tom Zachary again. I'm probably the only one here that was here when the Highlands subdivision, when the first one was approved, and one of the questions was about water. And the answer to that by the hydrologist for the developer was that you could never expect that everyone would fully use their water rights, which I know there's problems out there now. But once you give those water rights, those people can fully use them. So if you continue giving water rights, you're not only hurting the new people that come along that might need that water, but you're also hurting the people who have been here for 50 years or more. So that's my comment. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you, John.
I guess, Dan Reynolds for the record, Dan, if I may expand on what I was answering, I think the question being asked is that if we have a certain amount of allocations on the books, if at some point they are all fully utilized, what would my office do, essentially? And water law in the state is based on first in time, first in right, prior appropriation doctrine. So that would mean that we would go to the first person and they could get theirs, but the last person in, we could ask them to start, you know, pulling back, or I'm sure you've heard in the news, curtailments. And a lot of times we're looking at who was in after that perennial yield number was met. A lot of times those numbers were established, like I said, in 1960s, 1970s, before we had a, you know, maybe an understanding of how much water was actually in the basin or how much was being utilized. This didn't get cut off at those times, so, you know, the amount of applications or permits being applied for with my office. So now we're at a point where we're managing those, and we see that it's over-appropriated. But being a designated basin, we do have things in place that we can ask people to cut back. Our goal is to never cut anybody off, and there's actually been some NRS adopted to do that to protect domestic wells. But we can ask people to cut back or start to scale back their usage and stuff like that. And that we could get into a whole bunch of things there as well. And like I said, curtailment is one of those ways, but you start to only see that in extreme circumstances. Like we're starting to see that type of thing in, you know, Diamond Valley or Pahrump and stuff like that, where things have really started to come to a head. So hopefully that better answers that.
All right. Is there any more public comment? Not seeing any. You guys want to make a motion on this?
Great tomorrow.
All right, let's do that.
Yeah. I, Commissioner Mitchell, move to make the determination that the cost of collecting the water basin assessments is greater than the revenue that would be received, and thereby move to appropriate the water basin assessment in the amount of $14,400 from the county general fund, and authorize the county clerk to sign the certificate that the funds have been received in accordance with NRS 354.040.
Second that motion.
There's a motion and a second. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Motion passes unanimously. Thank you very much for coming up. Mr. Zachary, thanks for your comments. We're going to move on to item number 10, discussion only, no possible action. Presentation of member evaluation and performance review by the Nevada Public Agency Insurance Pool and Public Agency Compensation Trust, known as Pool and PACT, to include program services available to and used by the county, how Story County's coverage limits and allocations are determined, and workers' compensation, property, and general liability claims summary.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Alan Kult. I'm the Chief Financial Officer for Pool PACT. And with me, we have Marshall Smith, our risk manager, and Jared Hickman, who also works in our risk management department. It's great to be back in Virginia City. You guys hosted the county fiscal officers, and I was able to come up here for that conference. And it was a great balance of technical accounting information as well as great Virginia City hospitality. And it's always good to come back. Prior to coming to Pool PACT, I was with Churchill County for 26 years. And we had those two agenda items that you just spoke of every year. And that assessment was controversial, actually, in Churchill County and our basin as well. It's great to be here to talk about Pool PACT because you guys are one of the founding members. You guys joined Pool PACT in 1987 when the pool started. When the workers' comp program started in 1996, Story County was one of the members that stepped up immediately to join in the workers' comp program that was developed because it is a member-governed organization. You're the owners, okay? Member-governed, member-served. And the workers' comp program was set up to save money because at that time the state of Nevada was balancing the SIS program on the backs of local governments. So being a member service consortium of cities, counties, school districts, and those type of things allows us to be react to the needs of the members. And I was a member when I was over at Churchill County as a comptroller, finance director over there, and then came over to Pool PACT, 4 years ago. During that time, one of the mantras of Pool and PACT is members helping members. And I can remember working with Pat Whitten during the financial difficulties that Story County had when the Department of Taxation was watching the financial situation here in Story County and working with Pat to help get those things. And that's just an example of members helping other members. And your county manager, Austin Osborne, he serves on our HR Oversight Committee, making sure that the oversight of the HR program, and Jeannie Green used to be our general manager at Pool PACT of the HR program, that their services are meeting the unique needs of the individual counties that we serve. You know, we're so proud that Story County has a great history within the program, and they've contributed significantly to it. And our belief is that the programs of Pool and PACT help our member agencies and help those employees, senior leadership. So today I'd like to shed some light on some of the programs that you may or may not be aware of, of what happens, you know, behind the scenes of Pool Pact. There's a power of your membership within this organization. We're going to show a short video that's going to talk about the different things that Pool Pact offers. There's two-way accountability, good governance, transparency of what happens at Pool Pact to help you guys and how you guys help other members within Pool Pact. We'll talk about the assessments, the mod rates, workers' comp, how claims are processed. And then at the end of the day, because we've been working with the organization for many years, we have some recommendations that can help help Story County even better, become a better entity in some various areas. So let's cue up the video about the power of the pool. And a little history is going to be displayed in this quick video. Let me make sure my name is on just real quick. We started in 1987 with Wayne Carlson, and you guys signed on with an interlocal agreement, you know, contract, if you will, of with an interlocal agreement between all the different entities.
Since 1987, the Nevada Public Agency Insurance Pool, otherwise known as POOL, and the Public Agency Compensation Trust, known as PAT, have provided a growing network of resources and benefits for rural local governments throughout Nevada.
Today, over 30 years later, Nevada's rural public entities remain strongly committed to Pool PAC's mission of being one of the most progressive, responsive local government insurance pools in the nation.
Pool PAC offers superior property, casualty, pollution, terrorism, and workers' compensation coverage at reasonable costs. Its members benefit from incomparable human resources and risk management services that greatly enhance employee capabilities to serve the public.
Tailored coverage includes property, liability, cybersecurity, and other specialized coverage programs. From loss of income to unintentional errors and omissions and other unforeseen events, Pool Pact members enjoy coverage they can rely on.
Pool Pact acts as a critical clearinghouse for the gathering and sharing of a wide variety of resources related to risk management, while providing outstanding support to its members.
Most importantly, Pool Pact serves its members and their growing changing needs for quality and cost-effective coverage in a wide variety of ways.
Members benefit from an extensive grant program, loss control excellence program, and state-of-the-art training for everything from fraud prevention to school safety. Pool Pact's risk management services are simply unequaled in Nevada.
Risk management is at the core of members' needs today and tomorrow. From on-site and virtual assessments to claims analysis and sample policies, members benefit from growing resources and services tailored to meet members' needs in managing risks.
Included in the risk management services is training for governing boards on ethics, open meeting law, and governance, as well as an array of loss prevention courses. There's no greater asset of our members than the dedicated staff and employees they manage. Pool Pact's excellent human resources team provides a wealth and depth of experience in all aspects of today's HR management to enhance members' HR management capabilities.
Customized consultation with members, on-site assessments of HR practices, webinars, HR briefings, sample policies and forms, and an annual HR conference are just the beginning of the depth of knowledge and help Pool Pact members receive. Pool Pact is especially proud of the invaluable work its HR team provides in an ever-changing landscape of regulations and recommendations. From consulting to training, to certificate programs and breaking news alerts, our HR staff is an invaluable resource for members.
Law enforcement training and policies are just one of the many safety initiatives of the pool. Assessments of jail operations provide best practices, policies, and procedures. Working with school development committees, hazard vulnerability assessments are provided to keep schools safe and include assistance with emergency operations, response, and training.
Fire departments have access to specialized online training and e-learning courses. From aquatic facility assessments to online safety data sheet programs, Coal Pact offers an unrivaled suite of safety resources for our members.
Coal Pact provides health and wellness resources for our members. Our employee assistance, virtual nurse triage, and fit for retirement programs continue to prove our dedication to health and wellness in countless ways.
Today's employers are turning to online training more and more for a hands-on interactive way to learn, grow skills, and track progress.
Coal Pact's e-learning division innovates with the latest trends in online learning courses, platforms, and timely information.
Created especially for Coal Pact members, our online learning modules provide information that is not only state-of-the-art, but responsive to each member's specific requirements and interests.
Members can dive into our collection of over 100 courses, or create and upload their courses.
Members can customize their own portal with flexible options on how and when online training is delivered.
In addition, Coal Pact's e-learning administrator is available to help with training rollouts, support, and assistance.
Finally, cybersecurity is one of the greatest risks for all public entities today.
Coal Pact meets this risk challenge with an arsenal of tools and resources for its members.
From online training and an important cyber incident response hotline, to testing members' employees' cybersecurity awareness using phishing tests, Coal Pact has armed itself with the most advanced and effective guard against today's growing cybersecurity attacks, today and tomorrow.
Coal Pact's members benefit from these and many more resources that cannot be replicated by any other coverage.
From safety, risk management, human resources, health and wellness, e-learning, and cybersecurity challenges, Coal Pact is ready to meet and exceed its members' expectations every day.
Coal Pact provides affordable risk mitigation to its members. It identifies legislative and regulatory issues that directly affect members and provides critical, timely information to help them address the challenges of today and tomorrow.
The power of the pool continues to grow stronger, and members rest assured that they are protected by the most comprehensive coverage available.
For more information, please visit us online at poolpact.com.
Or call us anytime. We can be of service at 775-885-7475.
Pool Pact, the power of the pool.
Oh, I want to thank you guys for your participation in Pool Pact. And, you know, as part of the program, you know, we have good governance, transparency, oversight. You know, we are the Division of Insurance. Every year we have to submit our annual business plan to them. They review our rates, okay, and they look at our financial solvency to make sure that we are a viable long-term risk consortium for the membership, okay. We also belong to the Association of Governmental Risk Pools, or AGRIP. That's a pooling group of all the different pools across the United States, Canada, and Australia. And it's a professional group that provides oversight in champions where we can interact with other pools across the nation. One of the programs that they offer is an advisory standards recognition program for excellence. And we have submitted, going back to our very early history, after the second year of operations, we went through the rigorous AGRIP standards advisory, and we received their recognition for having model policies and best practices in place. That recognition standard is good for 3 years. So every 3 years, we have to resubmit that application to make sure that what we're doing at Pool Pact is at the highest level, the best standards. So not only, you know, do we put ourselves to make sure that we're doing the best, we are there to help our members do the best that they can do at the entity level. Now Marshall's going to go ahead and talk about the loss control excellence and claims process. Marshall.
Thank you very much. Like Alan said, and like this slide presents, we are only what we do, not what we say we do. So,
and state your full name for the record.
Marshall Smith, thank you. So it's not like do as we say, not as we do. We are doing this. Like Alan said, with the Nevada Division of Insurance, AGRIP, but also the Pool Pact Loss Control Committee developed the Loss Control Excellence Program, which is a comprehensive, rigorous assessment of every part of every one of our entities.
For the full program, it's about 250 questions, and it's called the Loss Control Excellence Program, not the Loss Control Average Program. Well, just like we recommend our members achieve this award, we went through this process and achieved the award ourselves with through an independent audit. Similarly, we hold Davis Claim Solutions as our third-party administrator, which does our general liability, property, and workers' comp claims adjustment. We, by contract, require them to do internal audits. Similarly, we pay for external audits every 3 years to make sure they're following the best practices and policies. So the point is, we're not just here saying we think this is a good idea for you to do. We place that on ourselves, and we achieve for that excellence as well. One more thing here, if I can leave you with anything, it is this, that members throughout the pool are under a misconception and mischaracterized Pool Pact as a regular insurance company. It is not. Pool Pact is a nonprofit organization owned by, governed by, and created solely by its local members, by statute. And we are here to dispel the notion that we are like a private insurance company. You are Pool Pact. Every one of the members is Pool Pact. Any revenue that is retained as a result of good risk management is not divided and sent out to private shareholders. Rather, that money is reinvested into the program, and we're going to go over a number of those programs which are available to you as a member.
So, Alan Cult again, the value proposition of being involved in Pool Pact. You know, the dividend, if you will, of dividend reinvestment in services. You know, using the top, we got your back, we got your six different layers of risk management services, loss control, human resources, cyber and IT security, law enforcement, health and safety, and e-learning. So that's the broad overview. Now what we want to do is we're going to turn and look at Story County. What's your involvement have been? And go ahead, Jared.
Thank you. Jared Hickman for the record. And thank you, Mr. Chair and Commissioners as well. This is my second time in this courthouse. The first is defense counsel in a criminal action, and thus far, this has been a much more pleasant experience. So these next few slides are intended to give you a snapshot, a little more detailed vision of what these programs and services are and how Story County utilizes them. And that will transition into the back half of the presentation is, you know, where are room for improvement in terms of the bottom line and Story County's assessments. Our first service is Absorb. If you recall during the video, that is the e-learning platform. This is a service that Story County utilizes very well. As you can see, there are 157 registered users, and in 2021, 339 completed courses and 225 completed courses in 21-22. Of significance that I would point out, because it ties in here in just a little bit, are the number of courses completed under the human resources category. 188 in 2021 and 130 in 21-22 with approximately three months to go. So please keep that in mind as we move through these slides, because there's going to be some tie-ins there as well.
Part of that money that is reinvested in the pool is the aquatic facilities assessment. We have 24 aquatic facilities throughout the pool. Every 4 years, we divide those into four quadrants, and so every 4 years, we go out and we just completed the Story County pool and excellent facility with excellent people here. The service value of that is about $3,000. And what that means is we bring in a national expert, aquatics facility expert, and he goes stem to stern on all the policies. He highlights what you're doing right and gives some suggestions on how to address those. And then we follow up with our pool members to make sure they did them. Last inspection was last July, and we just completed a follow-up in October.
Play it follow the bouncing ball with the list of attendees here. Pardon me. Our next program is cybersecurity. Cybersecurity and cybercrime ranks as the top risk that insurers face and has since 2017. There was 1 year in which it dropped to number two, but since then it has consistently been the top risk. So great emphasis is deserving in this topic. Through our cybersecurity program and our subject matter expert, Tony Rucci, we provide dark web monitoring, network support, passive network assessments, the Know Before program, support and training. My comments are going to be focused really on the last three because, as I previously mentioned, this is one of those areas where there is some room for improvement. The passive network assessment is our subject matter expert, Mr. Rucci, doing an assessment for vulnerabilities of your of Story County's network. That assessment was performed in 2018, and since then, Mr. Rucci has attempted to follow up to review that assessment, which we won't get into due to the sensitive nature of the content, but has attempted to follow up to rehash and see what corrective measures have been taken, and thus far has been unsuccessful. The Know Before campaign is a security and phishing awareness program that trains your employees in phishing and social engineering prevention. It is done entirely through email, which phishing and social engineering attacks normally are. It provides a simulated email that allows the user to take a look and report if it is part of the campaign. So it is an excellent training that takes very little time. Although Story County is enrolled, there has not been a campaign run thus far. And then finally, our support and training. Throughout the year, we offer a number of webinars and programs to provide education on topics such as cyber incident response plans, legislative changes that require cyber incident response plans. In fact, that was the primary topic of the the November 17th, 2021 webinar. And going back through our attendance records, we did not have any attendees for Story County. So this is an area that could see some significant improvement.
Then we go to the another assessment we provide. It's the detention facility assessment. We have 15 sheriff's offices in the state, and we go through each one of them. We work with an outfit by the name of Legal and Liability Risk Management Institute, and a guy by the name of Steve Campbell, who writes all the pool packs, road operations, and detention facility operations. And so we go to each one of our facilities, and your sheriff has been very willing to have us come in there and take a look. And that's how we see that as such a positive thing, because we've had occasions where the sheriff says, nope, we're good, everything's fine. Well, those are the ones we tend to worry about. But sheriff has been very receptive. Tony Dosen has been very much involved with that. I appreciate his help. We just completed our first assessment was in 2020. Then we come back to see where, if there's follow-up, if they've addressed. That was in February 21, and then we just completed the final review in March of 2022. And these are critical. These are critical. High-risk, critical tasks that every one of our detention facilities faces every single day. And so we go in there, and with Steve Campbell and his expertise, we just go through, and Steve says, here's what we want you to think about and address these. And all of our facilities are in the process of addressing them. So that's the detention facility assessment. Similarly, we have another program called Target Solutions. It's an online program. It is state-of-the-art training for fire and EMS. And I can tell you, the chief here and his department are one of the strongest users of this program. He's got great stats on using it, using this, and it is such critical training because what these men and women are doing every day is very dangerous stuff. This is the training that we can provide that's going to help them perform.
You know, back in 1998, a group of members said, hey, we need to do something for our police and our firefighters, okay, because of the high stress that they're involved in, and a cardiac wellness program was developed with Specialty Health, a Fit for Retirement program. And the focus of that program is to look at the men and women who serve in law enforcement and the fire departments, consider them professional athletes. They need to be treated like professional athletes, have strength and conditioning programs, health and wellness, nutrition, those type of things. And this program was developed to take care of those folks, to address those needs. Because that hypervigilance of that police officer has to be on total alert all the time in the surroundings, in the emotional roller coaster that they go on. These types of programs and services need to help those folks. And just recently, we've added a mental health component to that, because there was a need for that, and in the legislature last session, they had some requirements. So we developed this Fit for Retirement program back in 1998 as a cardiac wellness program, and we have an oversight committee. We really appreciate that Bob Reiser and the chief and the fire department has taken an active role in the leadership and how we can make this program better. And Bob has helped us, especially on the mental health issues and some of the challenges associated with participation within this program.
Human resources. This is among the most utilized, if not the most utilized service that PoolPack offers that Story County uses. These services are designed to minimize employment liability exposure through training, best practice policy procedure, education, and resources. I point out the value provided since the fiscal year 17-18 is almost $100,000. And again, this is very important, and I'd like you to keep in mind, you know, building upon our first block when we were looking at the absorb usage stats, in particular the training courses used, this is the next building block in this particular analysis. And when we get to the claims information, I'll show you exactly where this bears out. But Story County is well-versed with Mr. Osborne serving on the Oversight Committee, Jeannie Green being a former general manager at PoolPact on the human resources side. But as you can see through the slide, Story County utilizes the training programs very well through the HR services.
The risk management grant is another area where Story County can, there's room for opportunity, improvement there, because Story County has in the past utilized this program, but there's so much more available. The Loss Control Committee for the PoolPack developed the Loss Control Grant Program, and it has a grant program for risk management grants, which PoolPack cover, again, the members of PoolPack cover 75% of that grant, the member paying 25%. For the educational risk management grants, every member is entitled to five $2,000 grants a year. And everybody knows you got training budget concerns. Well, here it is, and that's covered at 100%. So that's an area where you should be taking more advantage of the loss control program.
Other opportunities. The other two services that PoolPack offers that Story County does not currently use are MSD Online and the Loss Control Excellence Program. The MSD Online is an online database for safety data sheets. I'm sure that most in here are familiar with safety data sheets and the giant three-ring, three-inch binders that are attached to a wall or sitting on a bookshelf somewhere. When chemicals come in, they're certainly added to, but they're never really parsed to remove chemicals that may not be used any longer by the department or entity. So what happens is that the binder gets bigger and bigger and bigger, starts really pulling at those supports. Hopefully it's mounted to a stud because it's coming down soon. But the impact of that is when there is an exposure, trying to find the appropriate safety data sheet to get to the medical provider, to get to the exposed employee so he knows what actions to take, becomes very difficult. MSDS Online puts all of that in an online database that's accessible from a desktop or mobile device through a quick and easy link. You go right to the chemical, pull it up, it's available. The safety data sheet information is available to the exposed employee or the treatment provider. Marshall has touched on the loss control excellence program, so I won't belabor that point too much. But I would like to point out that there are three significant benefits to the program, and that's claim reduction, recognition, and representation. Claim reduction in that this is a comprehensive review of policies across the entire entity, from risk management, fiscal controls, to streets and roads, parks and recreation. This goes through and looks at each segment of the entity to ensure that current policies, practices, and procedures follow best practice. And once all those policies and procedures are in place and operational, the county, the entity, gets significant benefits in the form of recognition. There is a plaque for the commission chambers that is a lovely plaque. It is good size. It's not the cheap tin foil or aluminum foil with green writing. But it provides recognition for your commission chambers. We work with a media consultant to get the information out to local media channels. And then finally, it provides representation through membership on the loss control committee. And that committee sets the loss control policy and agenda for Pool Pact. So it's important that someone is there to provide a voice for Story County. And then there's the financial incentive, and we'll cover that on our last slide as to the total, but that's on a tiered basis based on the number of employees the entity has and then the number of departments across the entity. And the award gets fairly substantial. There's an award for risk management programs specific to the year in which the award is given, and then a chance for supplemental awards up to 3 years after.
So now let's quickly talk about the performance of the workers' comp program. And when we look at workers' comp, some quick facts to look at. So the payroll of the employee on the assessment is capped at $36,000. Okay, so you got payroll is one factor. The next one is classification. Okay, so we have classifications for the various employee types. So, for example, police and fire have a different classification rate as well, classification code and rate than general government employees, okay? And then what you have is the entity has their own modification rate, okay? Pool wide or packed wide, the mod rate is one, is calculated at the average. So if you have a mod rate higher than one, you're gonna be paying a higher assessment, okay? And that means that your loss control services and your workplace safety may not be up to par, or you've had some bad luck on some claims. If the mod rate's below one, that you're better than the average PACT-wide member. So as we go to the next slide, we talk about the methodology of how the mod rates are computed. They're computed by an independent actuary, somebody independent from Pool Pact. They look at claims that currently, in the current year, they limit the losses of $50,000 per occurrence. They look at a four-year look back. Actually, it's a five-year window. The most current year is not used because it's the experience is too green, okay? And the maximum charge plus or minus 10% helps with that smoothing effect. We're looking at possibly changing that to more appropriately look at the rates so that the $50,000 cap may end up moved to $100,000 and the plus or minus 10%, with the logic there being that those people who have claims should be paying a higher rate. So let's take a quick look at where Story County has been, and you can see, again, one is the benchmark, and your mod rate in 2019 was one. And since that time, you've become better than average. Okay, it dropped down to 0.66, 0.81, 0.73. Amazing, great job. So that has an impact. So, for example, you were paying 100% at 100% in fiscal year 19. In 2020, you got a discounted rate of 0.67 because your mod rate was lower, as computed by the independent actuary. So what we can do is we go to the next slide. You can see we can run a mathematical calculation. I just want to show you that because I'm a numbers guy. That's how we compute the difference in the rates, the mods, payroll, those type of things. But as we go to the next slide, it's going to show the fiscal impact, a summary of that detailed spreadsheet that was just up there. Again, payroll is a factor. What the classification rates, if there were changes in the rate, and the mod rates. What I'd like to point out is that you've had significant reductions. As your mod rate went from 1.11 down, you saved $45,000 in fiscal year 19 with a lower rate. Fiscal year 20, as that rate continued to drop, you saved $158,000. Okay, the rate went up a little bit in 21, so that you had an increase as it relates to the mod rate, and then it dipped down in the current year, so you had an impact there. So if you want to affect change of what you're paying for workers' comp, one of the biggest things is looking at what safety measures can we put in place that affect the mod rate. The other two factors, payroll, if we hire more employees, you know, to work in Story County, the covered payroll goes up, then obviously you're going to have an increase associated with that. Or, you know, during COVID, you know, when there's a slight reduction in payroll, you had some savings there. So that's how we can make changes within financial impacts to the entity of Story County. But that mod rate's a huge deal, and you can see that you guys have done well in that look back period.
So now we get to the claims review portion of the presentation, and this is intended to be a high-level overview. This is not intended to be a individualized, intimate detail of claims. If that is something that the county or entity desires, we can certainly arrange that through Davies Claim Solution. But the purpose here is to find those issues resulting in frequent and or severe losses. In order to consider appropriate loss prevention and mitigation techniques. Now, this slide is a little busy. There's two things that I'd like to point out if I could step over here. One is our cluster analysis to begin with. And the purpose of this is to identify those outliers. We can see that generally, over time since 1996, your workers' compensation losses have fallen in this range under $400,000. But we do have some outliers. And starting with the most significant here, we have a claim from 2000 that remains open. And without getting into specifics, we know that that is a heart and lung claim with a total incurred of approximately $933,000. And our next one here, our next outlier here is points us to 2012, indicating a high frequency, so 17 claims reported, and then a higher than normal or higher than average total incurred for the year at $666,000. And those really break down into three claims. We have two heart and lung claims that came out of that particular year, totaling approximately $90,000 apiece, and then one vehicle accident claim that came out of that year that totaled approximately $433,000. Our next bar chart here, this is important because this is information related to the mod rate that Alan just told you about. Alan indicated that calculation of the mod rate considers the last 5 years, really 4 years, because the most recent year is too green to consider. So as we stand here today, we're considering a lot of these good years as our primary years, so you have a really great mod rate. But as the claim experience goes up, and we can see going back to 20 and 21, that our claim experience has gone up $264,000, $567,000. These great years are going to fall off and be replaced by years that have a little higher experience rating, and that will impact the mod rate specifically. And then our next slide gets us into identifying which categories are the most severe. We've talked about the heart lung at number two, at a total incurred of $1.1 million. And then the top category is sprain strain at a total of $1.2 million. So next slide, please. So that brings us back to our fit for retirement, dealing with the heart-lung claims, right? Our current usage is we have two active participants in the Fire Protection District and one active participant in the Sheriff's Office. Again, this is a comprehensive health and wellness program that provides fitness, wellness, personal training, personal training advice, nutrition advice, all designed to ensure that we don't have these heart and lung claims over time. So this is certainly an area that Story County could improve on in minimizing those claims. And then the next, as it pertains to workers' comp, we look at a frequency chart to see that sprains, strains, slips, trips, and falls are our most occurring injury types. And again, this is used to develop recommendations as to how we combat these to lower that claims experience.
You know, some of the challenges we face on the regulatory side is the legislature has increased the COLAs associated with permanent partial disabilities. So if an injured worker ends up with a permanent or partial disability, those payoffs are indexed up. And that indexing has increased the annuity tables, which ultimately increases the amount of payment to the injured worker. And that has an impact on, you know, the claims data that the individual entity may have. The heart-lung presumption for lifetime, it's presumed that if they have a heart or lung issue in the police and fire arena, or a cancer presumption, that it happened work-related as long as they've met those thresholds. So that's a quick overview of the workers' comp. Now we're going to move to the pool side and look at the claims associated with the pools. Go ahead, Jared.
Thank you. So getting back, we start with the same slide. We identify our outliers using our cluster analysis, and we're going to focus primarily here at the top over $1.2 million in terms of severity, and here over 20 in terms of frequency. From there, we can look at the exposure in terms of total incurred and identify 2016 as the year where we've had our most significant loss. And that bears out in comparing total incurred across all categories. In terms of severity, the all-risk building category has a total incurred since inception at $1.8 million, followed by errors and omissions. Now, think back to when we were having a discussion about Story County's usage of the human resource services. Employment liability ranks down here among the lower ones at $684,000. And when we look at the frequency, you can see that that's even lower between the 10 and 20 range in terms of reported claims. So the point there is to suggest that when the services are utilized and the culture is developed, focusing on human resources, it bears out in terms of the frequency and severity of losses experienced. So going back to all-risk building to try to identify what we can really focus on in terms of prevention and mitigation, this breaks down the sources of the losses in the all-risk building category by incurred total. And we can see that the overwhelming majority, again, going back to 2016, is a result of water. Next slide, please. And then this final slide looks to categorize what are the similarities in those losses. And I've highlighted six accident descriptions, and you can see, and the common thread here is water incursion. And our big ticket item right here at $935,000 is flood and storm damage at multiple locations, multiple buildings, multiple bridges resulting from the 2016 winter storm series that we experienced. So that's not to suggest that insurance is not available to cover those catastrophic losses. Certainly it is. And we know that those things cannot be prevented. But what we do know is that there can be mitigation steps taken to prevent the severity there. And so with that in mind, we turn to Marshall to identify how can we help.
And so this is the conclusion of our presentation, too. So, and again, this is called the Member Valuation and Performance Review. We want to just come here and explain and show you your performance and the value. So the question you're going to ask, I said, what I anticipate is, well, what you're using, you've got excellent risk management programs in place, because we can see by your claims history, your HR utilization rates are excellent. You've taken advantage of both the aquatic facility and the detention facility and assessments, and you're utilizing target solutions. So you say, well, what should we be doing then? What more can we do? One, engage in that cyber security protection. Get that know before system in place and operational. It's going to happen. Engage all of your fire and deputies in the Fit for Retirement program. You saw the claims ratio for those claims. Those are your big ticket claims. Plus, we want to take care of you. You want to take care of your people. Utilize the risk management grant program. That's utilize the sprains, strains, and trip and fall e-learning courses and training. You saw the extent of those claims. This can have a material impact on it. Then seek and achieve the Loss Control Excellence Program Award.
It's tough, but it touches every single department. And like Jared said, with that comes a $21,000 grant that comes right as a result of that award that is invested right back into your risk management program. You just need to call us. Now.
Yeah. So, you know, Story County's been a member since 1987 in the liability program. You've been a member of PACT since 96. You actively participate in our programs. And, yeah, oh, by the way, I guess we do provide insurance as well. And one point, during NACO, at last, the Nevada Association of Counties, we had a booth, and you guys won a financial review a class. And Austin is aware of that. I will come up, spend 6 hours teaching your employees, you know, or if you want one-on-one, have me spend time with your financial people. I'm more than willing to do that. You guys won that as a raffle prize. So we're here to help. We're here to learn what your concerns are, what we can be doing better. And at this time, we'll open it up for questions and answers.
Thank you. Sure. thank you, Mr. Chairman. Austin Osborne, for the record, thank you for your presentation. It's quite thorough. I did have one thing I want to bring up, and I'm sure this isn't the moment to resolve it, but our IT folks have informed us. We believe 90% of our team by 2021 has completed the KnowBefore training. We began using KnowBefore before PoolPack used KnowBefore, so perhaps we need to get a hold of you and make sure you have whatever it is we have to deliver over to you folks. Our IT team has been really hot and heavy on cybersecurity and not only awareness, but really going through deep into our programs to make sure we not only meet the best management practices of that, but also to work with some of the findings they have from a recent CISA report.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
We're on that.
Commissioner Gilman, do you have anything for these gentlemen?
I don't have anything specific questions. It's to me, it's obvious that the policies and the programs and the support that you offer and you shared with us here are significant, and a lot of opportunity for a county to look at and to evaluate. And so, from my perspective, very impressive on your program. Of course, you've had a lot of years to develop all of that and to do your analysis. I appreciate all of the statistical background, and of course, you have to have that in order to evaluate how we're doing and how we're responding to your needs as well as to the side. The other thing that I'm going to share with you as a commissioner for my chair is I definitely want to look at the program and everything that you all have submitted here in your presentation. Impressive. And of course, the financial impact, very important for my chair. How we are managing our county and the fiscal responsibilities that we chair from being elected as an official here. And the other thing that I want to share with you that I'm not sure that it's directly on the table, but one of the other things that I take very seriously and are happening in my world for my chair is I listen to my departments, I listen to my department heads, and I listen carefully to my staff. And because they're the folks that are on the front line that are working with all of these and implementing the programs and having the requirements to interface with all of the folks that you put on the field of action, if you will. And so I'm not sure that we have touched on that, but I just want you to know that as I'm evaluating where we're going to go and how I feel about those things, I'm paying careful attention to my staff and my department heads. And so I'm not sure this would come as a recommendation, but I want you to be aware of the fact that that's very, very important to my decision-making process. And I think it's important that you are constantly taking that temperature and how you're doing in the eyes of the folks that you're serving, because they have to interface with you and they have to have a comfortable relationship and coordination. And if that's not happening, then all the rest of the stuff we're looking at is really superfluous. And so those are my three-legged stool elements that I look at. And there's really not a question there, but I just want you to know that those are the important elements to me.
Thank you very much. That's a great feedback.
Yeah.
Thank you, Commissioner Gilman. Chair, do you have anything?
I don't have any questions. I just wanted to thank you for the comprehensive review. It's helpful to kind of take stock and see where we are, and we'll take a look at what we can improve on. So thank you.
Yeah, I want to thank you guys also for being here. Definitely some things I wasn't aware of, but, you know, as questions come up, I guess over time we'll have more. Is there any public comment regarding this presentation that was just made? Not seeing any public comment, and with no further questions, I guess we will thank you for putting this on and educating everybody, including those in the back there.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Your hardworking staff. Thanks.
All right. Per the noted change, we are going to move to item number 31, which is discussion for possible action, Public Safety Telecommunications Week 2022 proclamation.
Hello, Becky Parsons for the record. I wanted to start with last week, April 10th through the 16th, was the National Public Safety Telecommunications Week. If I could take a moment to thank the men and women of the Story County Communications Center for the wonderful job that they do over the last year. Our department has gone through some huge changes since last April. We've moved into a new building, updated our systems. Of course, that's like learning a whole new system. Implemented new programs like the text to 911 and our quality assurance. Those are just a few of the accomplishments that we have accomplished through the year. All of the staff has stepped up to make all of that happen. I appreciate their dedication and hard work everyone has put in. And I would like to take a moment to thank Panasonic, Story County Sheriff's Department, Fire District, and everyone else who came to us and reached out to us in this past week for Telecommunications Week. With that being said, I am asking for you guys to have a proclamation declared stating April 10th of 2022 through April 16th of 2022 as National Public Safety Telecommunications Week in Story County. And I'll just read this. Whereas behind every emergency response that takes place in Story County, there is a team of dedicated professional communication specialists who are often the first and most vital link between our citizens and the emergency services. And whereas Story County communications specialists are the lifeblood of information for public safety personnel 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, providing a critical safety service to the Story County Sheriff's Office, Story County Fire District, Story County Public Works. And whereas Story County communication specialists can no longer be regarded as administrative or clerical professionals, the emergencies they handle in real time make them the first responders. And whereas Story County communication specialists are the single vital link for our police officers, our firefighters. They are responsible for monitoring the first responders' activities and providing them with crucial information which ensures their safety. And whereas Story County communication specialists who serve at Story County Communication Center have exhibited compassion, understanding, professionalism during the thousands of calls for service each year. And whereas every Story County Communication Specialist is certified in the International Academy of Emergency Dispatch and Emergency Medical Dispatch and Police Emergency Medical Dispatch so that they may provide a substantial contribution to the apprehension of criminals and treatment of medical patients and suppression of fire. And therefore, we request the Story Board of Commissioners to proclaim this week of April 10th through the 16th of 2022 to be observed as the Public Safety Telecommunications Week in Story County.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Is there any public comment regarding this proclamation?
I don't see any public comment.
Commissioner Gilman, do you have any questions or comments regarding this?
I do not. Thank you.
Okay. Vice Chairman?
No, I think it's an excellent proclamation, well worded, and expresses our thanks well.
I don't have anything other than I think you know I live and die by that scanner, so I know you guys are out there doing what you can, sometimes in not the best situations, but you know, I know you got a hardworking team down there, so I wholly support this. With that said, would you entertain a motion then, Vice Chair?
Absolutely. This Commissioner Mitchell, I move to proclaim April 10th through 16th, 2022, as National Public Safety Telecommunications Week in Story County, Nevada.
Second.
There's a motion and a second. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Motion passes unanimously.
Thank you.
Are we doing a photo op for this?
Mm-hmm. You know, everybody was either working or other things went past, so...
It can be us and you, yeah. You gentlemen want to take a photo op on this?
Austin, you want to get there?
You can pretend you're holding up on it. Right there, photo op.
Well, you guys can all stand behind me because I'm short enough.
Austin, I think you're good
on this.
Thank you.
Say hello to the team.
I will.
All right. Back on track to item number 11. This discussion only, no action will be taken. Third quarter 2021-2022 Story County fiscal year budget versus actual review. Comptroller McCain.
Good morning, Jennifer McCain, Story County Comptroller. I promise I won't be as long as last meeting. As with our second quarter report, I am happy to tell you that things are going very smoothly for the budget. All revenues and most of our expenses are meeting our expected levels or they're exceeding them. With that being said, our general fund revenue, with 75% of the year behind us, has collected approximately 114% of the budget. With that, last year at this time, we were still higher than expected at 81%. Highlights of this are ad valorem is approximately 107% collected, and our shining star area is licenses and permits, which is 185% collected of what we had budgeted. That's a good sign that things are going very well in our building industry in our county. For our expenses within the general fund, all of our departments are trending at or below the 75% usage. A few areas are of a little bit of concern, and they're just worth noting. The commissioner's budget is roughly has 17% remaining. However, it's important to note that this budget also does include one-time transfers to other funds, as well as the insurance premium that is all paid up front, and it takes a while to utilize that. So I really don't expect to see this department being over budget when we come to the end of the year. The administrative budget, which is HR, is trending to be slightly over budget, with approximately only 24% remaining. However, we did find a small distribution error, and we're working to fix this, which would probably remedy that extra 1% of where they should be. Buildings and grounds is trending over budget in service and supplies. This is due to higher than anticipated utility charges across the board. which currently that line item has approximately only 7% remaining. This would be an area where we are looking at definitely having to augment that budget. The higher utility costs are not something we could have foreseen a year ago. As with the second quarter, the district court is trending over budget with approximately 7.5% currently left. This is due to unforeseen court costs. Our service department is trending to be over budget in operational expenses, and this is mainly due to the increase in oil and gas prices. Again, this is an area that no one could have foreseen what we're looking at today. We are looking at this in next year's budget and making sure that we're budgeting higher than we actually anticipate, not knowing when these issues are going to be remedied. Emergency management is over budget in service and supplies, and this was due to the unforeseen and unfortunate incident in Six Mile where we had to do a hazardous cleanup. Some fund highlights would be in the road department. Revenues are collected at 95%. This includes a transfer from the general fund as well as the gas and diesel tax. This is currently budgeted, collected 121% of what was budgeted. Their expenses are slightly over budget. This is due to higher than expected retiree insurance costs and some issues that I have found with doing this review in their PERS line item budget that we're working on correcting. The capital outlay line item for the roads department has 98% available. This is mainly due to road projects that haven't quite begun yet that are scheduled to begin within the next month or two. This creates an overall quarter balance of 66% remaining for the road department. Our capital projects fund, as with the second quarter, I want to remind you that it looks like this fund expenses are at 90%. However, the water and sewer projects that were taking place earlier this year that were funded by bonds, we place those in the capital fund because they're easier for us to track, but at the end of the year, we do some journal entries and move those over into the appropriate water and sewer funds where they belong. So at the end of the third quarter, our approximate usage of this fund is 50%. The main projects going on in this fund are the courthouse sidewalk redo that I'm sure no one has missed, the VC Highlands Fire Community Center project that Mike Northern talked about, most of these earlier, the VC Depot project, the Tower Road project, as well as a final payment on an ongoing Motorola radio project. VCTC, as Linda Ritter spoke earlier, is looking very well. The revenues are approximately 90% collected. And their expenses are trending where we expect them to be with our events just about getting ready to start up for the year again. Finally, I would like to thank all the department heads for their continued conservative spending. We do a line item budget every year, and I don't support the philosophy of use it or lose it. Every year we go to our department heads, they tell us what we need, and as you've all seen and been a part of with our budget, we try to give our departments everything they need to support our communities. With that, each year, even though they have budgeted for items, as the year goes by, if they find that they don't need them, they don't spend the money. And there's no negative effect for that on our departments. I think that's created a very cooperative budget process within Story County. And I think that you see through our budgeting and these budget to actual numbers that this has benefited us all the way around. That's all I have, unless you have any questions for me.
Thank you, Jennifer. Commissioner Gilman, do you have anything for Jennifer?
You know, I just, the comment, Jennifer, is that we owe such a debt of gratitude and thanks to all the departments, the department heads, the folks that bought into line item budgeting, and they've taken us to a place that I don't believe there's another county in the state of Nevada that enjoys what we do, and they they've just done a tremendous job. And so in my world, this is time for celebration. You know, things are really on track, but it's due to the integrity and the professionalism and the true caring of everybody that's helping operate this county. So this is a thank you for everyone. I really appreciate you.
Thank you.
I agree. Vice Chairman?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I'm sure we'd be happy to take credit for those revenue numbers looking as good as they are. A bit of good fortune there, and certainly some hearty thanks due for keeping the spending under control. So, and I imagine you've already done this, but I was just thinking, you know, in those few areas that are slightly over, it probably makes sense if they're structural to double check our assumptions on next year's budget.
Yes.
And just make sure that we've accounted for or adjusted for any anything that's anticipated to continue in those areas.
Again, I don't want to echo, sound like a broken record, but a big thanks to you, all the department heads. I think we set out an objective, and everybody has stayed on the course. So, the budget looks good as far as I go. And with that said, is there any public comment? Not seeing any. I want to thank you for the report.
Thank you.
No action will be taken. Do you gentlemen want to take a break before we hit the air horn?
Great idea.
Mm-hmm. All right. We're going to take a recess right around 10 minutes. We'll reconvene right after the 12 o'clock alarm.